glorious. Hulk Hogan, Hollywood Hulkster, whatever they call you, I'm coming after you, you coward.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast. I'm Oliver Newman, author of A Fan's Perspective 2016, What a Year to Be a Fan of WWE, and A Fan's Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling, available on paperback and Kindle on Amazon now. I have the absolute pleasure and honour of being joined today by Dean Allmark. Hi Dean, how you doing?
I'm good, mate, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. And thank you very much for joining me today here on Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast. To the fans who don't know the story, we've been trying to get you on for a short while, and we've finally tracked you down, and here we are.
That's it.
Yeah.
Got an ankle injury at the moment, so I've got some more free time than usual.
Yeah.
So, making the most of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we really hope that you come back from this ankle injury stronger and better than ever before here at Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast.
Well, thank you, me too.
Yeah, no worries. So yeah, just going straight into it, Dean. What's your first memory or moment of professional wrestling?
So, I was born and raised in Stoke-on-Trent, and my granddad was actually a big fan of wrestling, and I think when I was about 6 years old, he called me over and he said, come look at this, and I remember this, it's such a vivid memory. The match that I saw was a WWF match. It was Hakim versus Sabu Simba. And as soon as I saw that match, my mind was just blown. I was just like, oh my God, what the hell is this? And then literally from that moment onwards, I was just such a big fan.
That's an amazing story. Of all the wrestlers to choose, that was really cool.
That's just fascinating. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing.
What was it that fascinated you such, or just?
I think it was just everything. Up until that point, I hadn't seen like an arena or a wrestling ring or any wrestlers or anything like that. And just seeing it all together, it was just so much larger than life. I just couldn't believe that something like this existed.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So yeah, this might be a tie into what you've just said, but the match and the moment that made you a fan, was it that one, or is that a separate thing to you?
Yeah, I guess it is, to be honest, because like after I saw that, I just wanted to see more. And then every time, obviously with social media now, there's so many clips and GIFs that get put on Twitter. I see something every now and again, and it just brings back like a memory of when I was a kid, you know, just watching. Because I think WCW used to be on a Saturday morning in the early hours, and somebody posted a clip the other day. It was the Samoans, I think, doing a splash off the top rope to the floor. And just as soon as I saw the GIF, I was like, I remember this. It just come back, like, because I'd only seen it one time, because obviously it was live, but it was such a vivid memory. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh my God, I watched that at the time, you know.
I was going to say, I thought I was the only person crazy enough to stay up in the UK to watch Raw, Nitro and Thunder one after the other, but I'm guessing you did the exact same thing.
Me and my family were quite poor when we lived in Stoke-on-Trent, and I had a Sky TV at the time, mm-hmm. and so I used to get WCW for free on a channel called TNT, I think it was, that's what it was called, and so I used to watch Nitro, and then Sky Sports, we didn't have Sky Sports, but it was like scrambled, so you could still listen to the sound, and I used to just sit there for like 2 hours or whatever it was, just listening to the commentary. Just listening to the sound of it. And then eventually when we did get Sky, I was watching it then.
Yeah. I remember WBF being on like a German channel on the old Sky TV, and I'm guessing this is what you're saying about when it was scrambled, because that's how it was introduced on Sky TV originally. There wasn't a channel it was on in Germany, and it was kind of scrambled. And then obviously from there, WWE and WWF at the time, forged a partnership with Sky TV, and it kind of went from there. But it is quite cool hearing that you stayed up all night to watch WWE, because like I said, as a wrestling fan and a writer, I thought that the wrestlers and fans, you know, didn't really do that as much. I thought I was one of the only people. So.
That's... Oh no! I remember when I was in high school. If there was a pay per view on a Sunday night, my mum and dad used to make me go to bed at like 6 o'clock at night, and then I used to set my alarm for 12, and then stay up from 1 o'clock or whatever time it was on.
Yeah.
And then just go to school the next day.
That's amazing, Dean. It's like we've lived the same life when it comes to wrestling fandom. I would have
that was a monthly thing for me.
Yeah, I'd have the conversation with my mum and dad, and I'd be like, I'll go to school. And they're like, okay, you'll go to school. We're making sure you go to school. You go to bed early. Then you can watch your pay-per-view, and then you go into school. And obviously, you did the exact same thing. So that's quite crazy.
I never used to sleep, though. When I went to bed, I was just that excited to watch the event that I just couldn't sleep, so I just lay there for hours in my bed, just doing nothing.
Oh man, I remember I don't remember some of the lessons from school the next day, if I'm honest. I know we probably shouldn't say it on a podcast, but kids need to concentrate in school and stuff. But I'm not sure if I remember a Monday morning after a wrestling pay per view, in all honesty. And that went on for years.
I remember doing my GCSE exams after the events too. That never stopped me one time.
Oh wow! How'd you get on with your GCSEs?
Needless to say, rubbish.
Oh well, you forged a career in wrestling, Dean. So you know, you don't have to worry about your GCSEs that much, do you?
No.
Yeah. That's fair enough. So what made you decide to become a professional wrestler?
So, obviously, from the age of six, I watched it whenever I could. Watched it through high school. And then I left school when I was 15, because my birthday's in August. So I was like one of the younger kids that left when I was 15. And I got a job in a furniture factory. And my best friend at the time was a now wrestler called Robbie Dynamite. We've known each other since we were 8 years old.
Wow.
As soon as I turned 15, because he was a year older than me, he'd already started weight training, because he had it in his mind that he wanted to become a professional wrestler, which I never thought. I was just like, oh, that's cool that you want to do that. If that's what you want to do, move to America and become a wrestler, that's fine. But he'd already started training at the gym. And the building was a three-story building.
Mm-hmm.
And the gym was on the top floor. And then after a couple of weeks of signing up for the gym, the building announced that there was a wrestling school opening on the second floor. It was like a Muay Thai gym. And they had a room at the back, which was just like, it was a cold room with mats on the floor. And that's where the wrestling school opened up. So on that first day, Robbie Dynamite lent me the money to go with him, so we didn't have to go alone. and we never looked back. We just went every week.
Oh wow!
Every Sunday and every Tuesday.
Wow, that's an amazing story. Can you talk us through the first day at training?
So the first day of training, we turn up, and I think they had like about 40 students turn up on the opening day. So we're all crammed in this room, and half the class got taken in another room, which I guess when the week classes all, they took the most promising ones and took them in the other room. And, I was one of the ones that stayed in this room because I was a skinny 15-year-old, you know. So the instructors at the time basically said, okay, we're going to pair you up, and then you're going to grapple with your partner, trying to submit them. And then we'll switch partners and then just do the same again. So that's pretty much what we did for most of the day. You just got with a partner and like had a grapple with them. and you either tapped out or you tapped them out, and then you just carried on going. So I think it was a weekend, it was a Saturday and Sunday, so that was Saturday's session. When we turned up on Sunday, there was about maybe 15 students turn up that day. So I don't know whether they did it on purpose as like a vetting process, like just to separate the strong from the weak ones, the ones that really wanted it, but they just lost so many students that day from just making them just like submission grapple. But Robbie had already done amateur wrestling at this point. He was like a bronze medalist in the Commonwealths. So me and him, before we started wrestling training, used to do like amateur wrestling and stuff, and a lot of submission grappling. So we were just used to it. We used to just think it was fun. So on that second day, they showed us how to do rolls and how to bump and like some basic like wrist locks and stuff, which was interesting, you know. But by this point, like, me and Rob had already been wrestling for years. We had like a match that we had planned together, you know what I mean, that we planned in the living room. And it was just like, there was a bit of free time where we could just do what we wanted, kind of like you do what you learned. And we just started, like, Robbie, like, just a red body to balance, suplex me on the mats and stuff, you know what I mean? So I think the minds were a little bit blown that we could actually do this stuff. But as I say, we just loved it, and we weren't scared, like, just to wrestle on the concrete in the living room.
Fearless. What's
the... Stupid.
I'm not going to say that, Dean. Thoughts on your trainers, Dean? Keith Myatt and Chris Curtis.
Okay. Obviously, being 15 at the time, it was a little bit mind-blowing that there's like these grown men like just there, and they were like big guys, you know what I mean? It was nice having them there, to be honest. They were both really nice guys, and looked after me in like that first year of wrestling. Obviously, Chris used to be there taking the sessions every Tuesday and Sunday, and then Keith would turn up every now and again. But when it actually came to doing shows, Keith Myatt was one of the ones I wrestled a lot at that time, and he was kind of the one that taught me the importance of crowd work, like getting the crowd like wound up, you know. Just he used to have such a good way with the crowd, obviously being a good villain, that it was easy to get yourself over with the crowd. The rest of the guys on the shows just went in there and kind of wrestled and ignored the crowd. But Keith was the one on the shows that was going in there and being a full-on villain, getting the crowd going. So, I learned a lot from both. Chris obviously showed us how to do a wrist lock and how to bump and stuff like that. And then basically we just taught ourselves from there on.
Yeah, like I was saying, Dean, Chris Curtis is teaching you the basics. You and Robbie Dynamite are having amateur wrestling matches, and Keith Myatt's teaching your character work. So you're kind of getting the best from, you know, all angles, aren't you, really?
Yeah, and I think at that point as well, me and Rob used to go to Manchester on the train, and there used to be a tape trader in a shopping arcade. So you would walk in and the room was just like videotapes all over the walls and catalogues on the desk. And it was just wrestling from all over the world. So we discovered this, and we used to travel there with bin bags, and we used to spend like £100 each just buying videotapes from all around the world, and just as much variety as possible. We used to just spend like as much free time watching all these tapes and rewinding anything nice that we saw. And then just trying it in practice, you know. That was the good thing about VHS tapes. You could just, like, stop it at a certain point.
Yeah.
And then put it back in, and it could be at that point, you know. That was an important thing at the time.
I was going to say, at this point, it feels like my VHS collection against yours would be one hell of a wrestling fan's dream. I had to get rid of my tapes, unfortunately. I moved out, and we had to go down the skip. But... much like friend of the show, the Phoenix, Jody Fleisch, he talked about tape trading, and it is really nice hearing that wrestlers are and were big fans, like the fans are. It's nice. That's a nice connection for everybody, really.
Yeah, I think so.
because wrestlers kind of say, oh, you know, I got into the business and not as much of a fan anymore and things of that nature. And it's disheartening a little bit. So it's nice to hear that, you know, we kind of share that WCW Friday night thing and VHS tapes and things of that nature. That's really cool to hear as a wrestling fan and as a writer as well. So, yeah, do you have any thoughts and memories of your debut match?
Oh, my debut match was on January 22nd in 2000. It was against Chris Curtis. So it was a very... it was a match that I kind of knew, like, I was going into, and I knew what I was kind of going to be doing, you know what I mean? Because we'd spent so much time, like, him being my trainer. After the match, I had quite a serious elbow injury. I think he gave me something like a spinning sidewalk slam, and I landed funny on my elbow, which made it go really swollen. So that's one of the things I remember most about the match. Obviously, I videotaped it at the time. I still have that videotape in my collection, but it's never going to see the light of day. It's just there for as like an award or something like that. You know what I mean? It's just there.
I was going to say, Dean, your YouTube channel is a wrestling fan's dream. In all honesty, in terms of matches and who's who and like long matches, and I'm guessing full matches. I looked at it today and I was like, wow. I even saw the match that we'll talk a little bit later about at Oaken Gates in Telford. That's actually been taped and recorded and it's on your YouTube channel. So it's like, oh, I was there kind of thing. So that's pretty cool. So just a spin-off question from here. You faced your trainer in one of your trainers in your debut match. Do you think that helped more than facing a normal competitor, or did it hinder you in terms of, oh, I'm against my trainer, I've got to be the best that I can be?
No, I think for me at the time, obviously being like a shy, insecure kid, it was good to go in there with somebody that I knew was almost like my friend. You know what I mean? I think it would have been detrimental if I would have gone in there with somebody I didn't know and they took liberties, which was like a big thing at the time in wrestling, you know what I mean? If they would have, the way the job was then, it's a lot different than it is now. So I think I got lucky in my first couple of years of wrestling, to be honest.
No, that's fair enough.
This is the Bevway, the Northern Bruiser Drill. You are listening to Broken But Glorious.
I might be skipping back and forth with the questions based on the timeline and stuff, Dean, because I've obviously gone through your career and this interview could go on forever, basically. So I've just took out the highlights that I've kind of seen. So the next question I've got for you is, you was a part of the America's X Cup in 2004, and I just wanted to know your thoughts on the matches that you competed in and the whole Impact Wrestling experience.
So the way that happened was, I'd just come back. I've got an ankle injury now. And at that time in 2004, I had the exact same injury. It was a grade 4 ligament tear in my ankle. And I'd just come back after 8 weeks off. I was at a show in the Northgate Arena in Chester. And I just finished my match and I got back to the dressing room and Bobby Brookside came up to me and he said, I just had a phone call from Dave Penns and they're looking for 4 UK guys to go over to wrestle on this thing called the American X Cup against Team Mexico. Would you like to be a part of it? And I was like, oh my God. Because I was only, I think I was 19 at the time. 18 or 19, I was just like, oh, it's big, you know. It was like, it's going to be pay-per-view, it's going to be televised, and I was like, I don't know if I'm ready. I'd only been wrestling for like 4 years at the time. And at the end of the show, I just thought, I spoke with a couple of wrestlers at the show to ask their opinions on it, you know what I mean? I went up at the end of the show and I just said, okay, I'll do it. And he said, great. He said, you need to get your stuff together and head to the Heathrow Airport now. It was either Heathrow or Gatwick, one of the two. He said you go with Frankie, Sloan, James Mason, Robbie Dynamite. And you need to be there tomorrow because that's when the first show is.
Wow.
So it was like literally get there, like drive 5 hours to the airport, catch the plane, catch a 2 hour plane to Tennessee, and then go straight to the show and record the first match, which was against Miss Aguila, who wrestled in the WWF as S.A. Rios. And they hit me with the news that they wanted me as a heel, which I'd never done before. So that was a little bit intimidating.
Straight into the deep water, aren't you, Dean?
Yeah, and without being nasty to Miss Aguila or anything like that, he didn't seem like he was there. To have a WrestleMania type performance, you know. So we went in there and did it, and I think a few things went wrong in the match, and I always tell people that that's the worst match of my career.
Oh wow, that's unfortunate.
As soon as the match finished, I went outside the building, sat against the wall and cried for like 20 minutes. I was like disappointed with myself. The way it used to be positioned in their old arena, there was a big screen like backstage.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it was the big Titantron. So the dressing room was like there was a big dressing room downstairs and then one on a balcony, but both of them were facing the Titantron, so you could watch the match while you were getting changed.
Yeah,
and like they had people there like Sabu, Conan, Raven, all these guys that grown up watching, you know. And just in my mind I thought, oh my god, they just see me have the worst match of my career. So it was it was terrible, that first experience. And then I think they had the week off before the next matches, and I just made sure that them two matches the week after, one was a tag match, one was an 8-man, I made sure that my performance was going to be much better this time.
Yeah, like I said, that's really unfortunate, because I'm guessing from your fandom and stuff, watching S.A. Rios in WWF and then wrestling him on a pay-per-view must have been like a dream scenario for you.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then...
I think he was like a little bit injured as well. I think he said his knee was hurt or something like that. So it's just a little bit frustrating. But if it would happen now, I would know what to do in that situation after 18 years of wrestling. After 4 years of wrestling, you're just so used to getting led in matches, and having to lead a match like that against somebody like that is very tough.
Mm. Absolutely. I think it was just a bad position for you to be in all honesty, Dean.
That's it.
Do you know what I mean? If you haven't worked that character before, how can you possibly, you know, become that character on live pay-per-view? That's a really, really just unfortunate experience.
It was unfortunate, but like I always tell everybody, the best experiences you can have in wrestling are bad experiences. You don't learn a lot from good experiences. So I say that that's the worst match of my career, because after that, I never let that happen again, you know. So I think all in all, it was a good experience. Although it was a bad one, it was the best thing that could possibly happen to me at that point.
Was there anyone like backstage that tried to pick you up after this experience? You know, any of the veterans of TNA?
Obviously being there with Rob, James and Frankie. They're like my family anyway, and they were all star guys that I was on the road with every day. Mm-hmm. So having them there definitely helped, because they'd laugh and joke about it, you know what I mean, which would make me feel better.
That's fair enough, and it's nice for them to rally around when you felt like that. So I'm going to move on now, because we've obviously talked in depth about that. I remember watching, well, just one quick last thought on it. I remember watching, the TNA X Cup, America's X Cup on the Wrestling Channel. And yes. I enjoyed it, in all honesty. I think you're being harsh on yourself for that match. I don't remember feeling that way about that match. Obviously, this is, 14 years ago now, so my mind and my memory might be a bit hazy, But I thought the UK team did themselves proud in that, and you gave a really good account of yourselves out there. So flying the flag and being on pay per view is amazing for a British team. So you should take that, and you should be really happy that you was able to be part of that. In all honesty.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Going on to what I believe would be one of the highlights of your career so far, defeating childhood friend Robbie Dynamite to become the All-Star Wrestling Mid-Heavyweight Champion. What are your thoughts and your memories about this match, Dean?
So that match, if...
This was the first time.
Yes. This was one of many thousands of times I wrestled Robbie Dynamite in my career. But obviously, that match was in at the Victoria Hall in Hanley Stoke-on-Trent. It's a match where we used to go watch All-Star shows when we were kids, you know what I mean? That's the place that we both had a picture taken with the Bushwhackers there. We had a picture taken with Greg Valentine, with Yokozuna there, you know, so... To beat Robbie in that venue for what was like my first major title in wrestling was definitely a big deal for me.
And moving on to this is Frontier Wrestling Alliance against All Star Wrestling, the Interfederation Cup. Do you have any memories and thoughts on that, the matches that you were a part of, and just the whole experience? How did it come together in the first place? Because obviously at the time All Star Wrestling is very separate to anything else, and then all of a sudden, combining with Frontier Wrestling Alliance.
So I think that what that was down to was Robbie Brookside was obviously a key member. He was like the leader of the dressing room in All Star, and he was doing shows for SWA at the time. So they come up with this concept of was going to Morecambe as like the heel All Star team against the babyface FWA team. Again, me being a heel for the second time in my career, on a show which at the time, like, that was like my first independent show that I'd done, and I was well aware of FWA and the fact that they do DVDs and stuff like that. So I went in there 2 years after the TNA thing. A much more like well-rounded wrestler, you know. All the stuff that I wanted to do in TNA, and all the stuff that I knew I should have done, I made sure I did in that match. And me and Johnny Stone wrestled for the first time that night, and the match came off really good.
That's really, really good to hear, because obviously, the Wonder Kid Johnny Storm is one of the icons of British wrestling in the early 2000s, isn't he? Along with the Phoenix, Jody Fleisch, and Doug Williams.
Yes.
So to be able to put yourself in that situation, was this 6 years into your career, you said?
Yeah, it was. And Johnny had been wrestling on All-Star shows since I started for All-Star in like 2002. I used to watch his matches and think, man, he's so good. He was so good with the crowd. And a lot of my stuff that I started to do in matches was down to watching like Johnny Storm and the way he did stuff, especially when he came to like the crowd and the charisma side of wrestling, you know. He was one of the top ones for that. So at the time I was like, I'm ready for this, and that's one of the matches that you'll find on my YouTube channel that's up there, and it's actually came off really good. Apart from the fact that I think we had 20 minutes, and going into the sprint they were like 2 minutes remaining, I was like, oh my god, we need to get going, because we're just literally just having so much fun, just wrestling away. So it was a good match, that one.
Thanks everyone, I hope you enjoyed part one of my interview with 18 year veteran of the British wrestling scene, Dean Ellmark. Look out for part two and part three in the coming weeks here on Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast. I am Oliver Newman, author of Fan's Perspective 2016, What a Year to Be a Fan of WWE, and A Fan's Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling. And as a proud Brummie, I'm really proud to be coming to Birmingham for my first ever book signing. at Pro Wrestling Cartel in the Oasis Market this Saturday, the 3rd of March, after 3 p.m. You know, being brought up in Birmingham, living in Smallheath, Sheldon and Stechford, it's an absolute honour and privilege to be able to bring my first ever book signing to Birmingham. So, yeah, hopefully the weather will go the right way for everyone and you'll join me at the shop and we'll talk wrestling, we'll do a wrestling Q&A, there might be a competition as well, and maybe even a book reading too. So hopefully brave the weather and have a great time this Saturday afternoon. Hope everyone's having a great day, because this will be released today, which is Friday, so it'll be tomorrow for the book signing. And yeah, have a good weekend and hopefully I'll see you on Saturday. Thanks everyone, bye for now.